Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, which include former graduate students, undergraduates. Particularly want to acknowledge Teresa Fukuda, who's the research experience for undergraduate students that initiated this work as part of the Yosemite RU program at UC Merced. Well, the interactions between vegetation and plants has fascinated soil scientists, ecologists, foresters for a long time, and Dan Binkley pointed out, for those of you that enjoyed his presentation earlier, talked about some of these interactions in his talk. But if you look at the literature, even though frequently was mentioned that vegetation affected soils, there wasn't really many tests that actually documented these changes. And it wasn't until the 1962 and the era after that folks really started experimentally or observationally documenting the changes or the effects that vegetation, either individual trees or stands of trees, could have on soil properties and processes. Well, we were intrigued, we being Teresa Fukuda and myself, about the lack of information on the interactions between the largest single tree, the giant sequoia, and also the largest living thing on the planet by volume, on soils and soil processes. And in 1962, Paul Zinke and Bob Crocker examined soil properties under giant sequoia trees and some of the same growths I'm going to talk about today, but they didn't compare those properties with co-occurring tree species in these groves and making conclusions about the effects of giant sequoia somewhat problematic. And so we said, well, basically, these things are big, they live a long time, so they should have commensurate large impacts on the soils that develop underneath them. So our primary objective was to evaluate the impact of mature giant sequoia trees relative to co-dominant mature sugar pines on soil pools and processes. And secondarily, because these groves occur on contrasting parent materials throughout the Sierra, we wanted to also look at the, secondarily at least, the interactions between parent material and species, tree species, on soil properties. So this is a picture of our study sites. Both are contained within Yosemite National Park, about 200 kilometers southeast of Sacramento. They're both on a Mediterranean-type climate. They have warm, dry summers and cool, usually wet, but not always, winters. The Mariposa Grove down here is higher in elevation. It's a little wetter. It's a little cooler the Merced Grove than the Merced Grove to the north. Interesting, they both occur on, like I mentioned before, on contrasting parent materials. The Mariposa Grove is, the soils are derived from metavolcanic rock. Soils in the Merced Grove are derived from metasedimentary rock that's quartz rich. But they both are classified, and I think Ron Tasky actually, if he's in the audience, I think he classified these soils. Oh, Ron. They both are in the same soil family, despite the differences in parent materials. So we should have a discussion about that. So I used a pear tree, or we, I should say, we used a pear tree design. We had 16 replicates. We used co-dominant sugar pine as sort of our control tree to compare giant sequoia effects. We tried to place the sugar pine and giant sequoia pear as close as together as we could. We tried to make other factors as similar as possible, aspect, slope, understory vegetation if it's present. We try to avoid infixing understory species like ceanothus where possible. And then we sampled the soils. So this gives you an idea of a giant sequoia sugar pine pear shown here. And during the summer of 2013, we sampled soil on the, and a soil meaning forest floor and, or excuse me, organic O-horizon, I have it right here, O-horizon mineral soil on the downhill side of the trees with the idea that's where the litter input would be greatest. And we did some preliminary measurements to show this. So we thought the influence on the soils would be the greatest on the downhill side because of that reason. We sampled the O-horizon, and then after removing the O-horizon, we sampled the top 5 centimeters of mineral soil. And we composited this material by tree, and then we brought the material back to the laboratory. Back in the laboratory, we sieved the soil and we did a variety of different analyses on the mineral soil material and the O-horizon that are shown here. I want to point out our measure of available nitrogen was an anaerobically mineralizable nitrogen assay, which approximates the microbial N pool. Our measure of available P was the Bray 1 extraction, which has its pluses and minuses. And the O-horizon material was sampled in a very similar way, processed in a very similar way, except instead of sieving, we cut the material up into small pieces before subsampling. And the soil solution ratios were adjusted appropriately. So here are some grove and study tree characteristics of the two mixed conifer forests, Mariposa Grove and the Merced Grove. And you can see that the stand density is very similar between these two groves. But as you might expect, the giant sequoia trees are much bigger than the sugar pine trees. And this was true in both groves. But if you look, like within a species, each grove had about the same mean tree size. Now, just to give you an idea, these sugar pines, although they're dwarfed by the giant sequoia, they're still big trees. They're about, on average, 1.6 meters in diameter, and they're believed to be at least 300 years old. So they're not living up to 3,000, but they're pretty old trees. So the next several slides are going to have a similar format, so I'm going to spend a little time talking about the structure of the data I'm going to present. The soils on O-horizons that are found underneath the giant sequoia are in green. The ones that are under sugar pine are in red. On the left-hand side of each figure panel are the data from the Mariposa Grove. On the right-hand side are the data from the Merced Grove. And I've hatched these bars in the Merced Grove to further delineate them from the Mariposa Grove because they're both M words and they gets confusing at times. So, first data set. The aerial density of the O-horizon was not different, despite the fact that the trees are much bigger, the giant sequoia trees are much bigger than the sugar pine trees. And this is also true of total carbon. There was no significant difference as a function of tree species. However, if you looked into the mineral soil, the bulk density was higher under sugar pine, and the soil under giant sequoia had 22% higher total carbon concentration, suggesting that soil organic matter content was higher under the giant sequoia. There was no effect on inorganic nitrogen, by at least tree species effects, in the O-horizon. And this was also mostly true in the mineral soil, although there was a small 7% increase in ammonium pools under giant sequoia than under sugar pine, but it was a fairly small difference. Now, looking at the O-horizon available and total N pools, on the left is the available N measure, and you can see that giant sequoia had almost 50% higher available nitrogen than O-horizon material under sugar pine, but there was no commensurate difference in total nitrogen between the two species. In the mineral soil, it was a similar pattern, but in this case, total nitrogen was also elevated in soils under the giant sequoia trees. And also, there was an interesting interaction between grove and species for available nitrogen, where the difference between species was greater in the Merced Grove than in the Mariposa Grove. There, in contrast to nitrogen, there is no effect of species on available N or total P for the O-horizon, shown here, or for the mineral soil, shown here. Moving on to extractable base cations, soil O-horizon material under giant sequoia trees had 28 to 53% higher base cations, depending on which one you're talking about. And the sum of the base cations were about 50% higher under giant sequoia than under sugar pine. And you had a similar pattern in the mineral soil under these trees, where giant sequoia trees had 30 to 76% higher base cations in the mineral soil compared to mineral soil under sugar pine. And that resulted in the sum of the base cations being about 70 percent higher under giant sequoia trees than under sugar pine. There was also an interesting interaction with magnesium where the difference between species was greater, and again in the Merced Grove, than in the Mariposa Grove. Giant sequoia, as you might expect based on the previous data, also resulted in a pH of about 0.8 unit higher in the O-horizon than O-horizon materials under sugar pine. And sugar pine had 2.4 to 4.3 times higher extractable aluminum and 1.5 times higher extractable iron than O-horizon material under sugar pine. There was also, again, an interesting interaction that occurred between grove and species for extractable aluminum, where the difference between species this time was greatest in the Mariposa Grove. Also, I didn't mention this, but extractable sulfur was 60% higher under giant sequoia. In the mineral soil, the pattern was somewhat the same. Elevated pH under giant sequoia compared to sugar pine. Iron and aluminum tended to be elevated, but statistically it was only elevated under sugar pine for aluminum, but not in iron. Interestingly, under sugar pine, we couldn't produce a measurable extractable sulfur pool in the soil. However, there was still an interaction because there was a lot higher extractable sulfur in the mineral soil under under giant sequoia in the Merced Grove. So, the question is, are these really big effects? And so to try to answer this question, or at least provide information related to it, I compared our results with data produced by Adrian Finzi and colleagues comparing deciduous coniferous tree species within the state of Connecticut. And I used the biggest difference that they observed between sugar maple and eastern hemlock. And so the data here are presented as ratios of properties between each species pair for the O horizon and the A horizon, except for pH was calculated as a difference between the species pair. And if you compare the values between our study and their study, you see that the effects were comparable, despite the fact we're talking about, in my study, two coniferous species, and they're comparing a deciduous and a coniferous species, so entirely different ecological functional groups. And so at least I and my colleagues, and my co-authors, conclude that, yes, these differences are, well, ginormous. And so, in summary, compared to sugar pine, giant sequoia generally had higher base cations in both horizons that we sampled and lower acid cations. Nitrogen, but not phosphorus, availability in stocks were elevated under giant sequoia compared to under sugar pine. Changes in these soil properties were large for comparing two similar, at least same, both gymnosperms, and were all about the same size as you'd find between two totally different trees in occupying totally two different ecological functional groups. There, in general, we didn't find a lot of grove by species interactions, and this suggests that our data can be extrapolated with some confidence across the other 60 or 70 groves that occur in the Sierra Nevada. And finally, I should point out that parent material does matter. I didn't emphasize that here, but frequently the differences that we observed in soil properties between parent materials were of comparable magnitude as the difference between species. And this is to remind us that we're still in a drought. Here's Yosemite Falls without any water, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have at this time. Thank you. Dale. Up to. They were in the thousands of years. Yeah. I didn't core them myself.
Sugar pine was in the hundreds of
years. Yes.
Yeah. So there is a time difference here in the occupancy of the sites.
Definitely.
It could play a role. And I'm just kind of curious, 300 years ago, what was on the sugar pine site?
Very good question.
Not sequoia.
not sequoia. You're right, and I that's a really good question, and unfortunately I don't have the paleoecological data to answer that question, but it's a good one.
Do you have any speculation on that?
Well,
important in terms of your results.
Yes, I agree. If you look at recruitment in these stands, like compare recruitment of giant sequoia following prescribed fire or natural fire, it's in open areas, okay, where there isn't a current tree occupying that area. And so in the Merced Grove, where there's not a lot of open areas and they haven't done a lot of burning, there's very little recruitment of giant sequoia at all. And that was one of the reasons that we were interested in working at that particular site. So I think that over time that these giant sequoia trees would have to move, if they're going to persist on the landscape, which is a question, they would have to move around. So they'd have to occupy gaps in order to be successful. But that's about the best I can speculate at this point. It's probably not satisfactory for you. Maybe Beth? Sorry, Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if every time I sampled an area under a giant sequoia, there used to be a ceanothus bush there, and not under a sugar pine. I think the probability would be fairly much equal, but I don't have any data to say I'm right and you're incorrect either. So, Rob, if you have a chance.
Yeah. Is that true of this area?
So I particularly chose sites that had not had a recent history of burning. So both the sites that I was working on had been prescribed burn only once and not since 1990. In terms of their natural fire history, it's pretty comparable between the two groves, although I don't think there's been an as in-depth study in the Merced Grove like there has been at the Mariposa Grove. Thank you.
We'll have to hold any other questions till the end. Thank you very much.